Hope you got your sermon outline this morning. I was just asking the Lord last Monday what we should be doing for this weekend, and I just felt led to go in a different direction. So I text Liam, Pastor Liam, and I knew he was busy, but I thought maybe he'll respond to me. And together we decided that this was really what we wanted to do. So we're going to be looking at a new series this upcoming week, as I shared with you through our text this morning. I'm not sure if any men here experience this, but the end of my kitchen counter, there is a piece of paper, and on the top of it, it's called Bob's to-do list. In fact, the only way I get out of trouble is if she said, "Did you do this?" And I would say, "Well, it's not on the list." If it's not on the list, it doesn't get done. And she's gotten very, very faithful about putting what she says on the paper. And when I look at this, I go, you know what, this is what I've got to do today. I've got a whole list of things, of stuff that I have to do, a list so long that it's probably impossible for me to ever get done. But how about you? What do you have to do today? Well, I try to check off a few more of my have-tos. They turn to someone and ask them, what do you have to do today? Turn to your neighbor. What do you have to do today? What do you have to do? And listen for their response. So, to get us started, what did you say that you have on your have-to-do list? And the key word here is have. You have to do it. Maybe there's some place you've got to go tomorrow. Maybe there's something you need to do at work that didn't get done and you have to finish it. Or maybe you've got to go to the doctor, or maybe you've got to go to the grocery store or the DMV. What is it? There's so many things for us to do. In Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis, one of the great thinkers of the last century, wrote this: "Each morning when I wake up, all your wishes and hopes for the day rush at you like wild animals." Isn't that true? What's on your have-to list? This is so right on, isn't it? For most of us, it's not so much hopes and wishes as it is just the same old stuff that we have to do. I meet a lot of people who have a long list of have-tos and very little passion, very little purpose. I mean, I especially notice it in guys. I was talking to a friend of mine who was complaining about how he has to do the same thing, the same old thing every day. Do you know what I'm talking about? Here's how he explained it. Now, don't shoot the messenger. This is how he said it. You have to get up at the same old time, shut off the same old alarm clock. You have to walk to the same old bathroom, look at the same old face in the same old mirror, and you have to get in that same old shower and dry off with that same old towel and put on some same old clothes. And you have to walk down the same old kitchen, get out the same old bowl, eat the same old cereal, drink the same old coffee, read the same old paper, kiss the same old wife. He said this. I didn't say this. Then you have to drive to the same old car, down the same old road, to the same old job, and to do the same old work and laugh at the same old jokes the boss tells the same old way every day. And you clock out at the same old time, and you get back in your same old car, and you drive back that same old road, and you pull in the same old garage, and you hug your same old kids, and you walk in the same old kitchen, you sit down and eat the same old dinner. And finally, you walk into the family room, the same old family room, and you sit in the same old recliner because you've got a chair. You watch the same old Wheel of Fortune, and you watch that, and you fall asleep in the same old chair. When you have to get up, you crawl into the same old bed. And you ask that same old wife the same old question, and you get the same old answer. You roll over, you set the same old alarm clock, and you get up the next day, and you do the same thing all over again. So many people think that that's how you live. But I don't want the same old, do you? We've got one shot at this deal. I want to wake up with every morning with passion and purpose. Sure, there's lots of things that we have to do. But I believe by God's design, there are also things that you have to do. I believe that God birthed in you. He birthed you with a dream, something that you and only you have to do with your life. Now, let me give you a little bit of background. As I was looking at this series, I was thinking, you know, we just finished building better relationships. We just spent 9 weeks doing that together. And I'm thinking the world is extremely suspicious of Christians. We have a hard time even thinking about sharing our faith. I know that we're called, you've heard me say this many times, to be salt and light. We're to make things better and we're to make things brighter. And our mission's not complete. There's lots of people that don't know Jesus. So I want us to prepare for the opportunity of making a difference so that we're just not putting things in our minds, but we're actually working them through. Look at what Frederick Butcher said. Our calling is where our great passion meets the world's greatest need. What do you think the world's greatest need is today? It's a great question. When you watch the news, when you read the social feeds, when you see what's happening in this world, our greatest passion needs to meet the greatest need of the world. And my friends, I believe that the people in our world, their greatest need is they need Jesus. I believe that somewhere near the intersection of your passion and the world's need is your mission. And if you'll journey with us for the next 5 weeks of this series, my hope is that we'll help every one of you discover a mission so compelling that you simply have to do it. Today, I want to lay the groundwork for our series on discovering your mission. So we need to start by looking into the life and the ministry of Jesus. So here's the first thing I want you to see, that we need to embrace Jesus' mission. Let's begin with a famous story where Jesus talks about something that he just had to do. The story begins often, and we often read over it, it just goes unnoticed, but look at what it says in John chapter 4, verse 4. Now Jesus, what? Had to go to Samaria. Now we could read it one of two ways. We could read it like, you know, like this, that just Jesus had to go through Samaria. Like it was a have to, the same old, same old. Like he had no other choice, no other option. Or we could read it just like this. Jesus had to go through Samaria, because there was a compelling cause. There was a reason. There was something inside him that said, I have to go there. He had someone to meet. A little homework tells us that there must have been a compelling cause, because normally, if you understand this story, Jews avoided Samaria at all costs. Samaritans were hated. They were like the enemy. Samaritans were to the Jews what Flame fans are to Oiler fans. I'm glad you got that one. Anyway, when the Bible says that Jesus had to go through Samaria, what makes this statement so striking is that Jesus really didn't have to go through Samaria. He could have taken the route that all Jewish people would have taken, would have been to go around Samaria. But Jesus had to go through Samaria because of the mission God had given to him. There was a woman he just had to meet. Now look at verse 7. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, let me just stop there. It was at noon. Nobody came at noon. It was the hottest time of the day. The reason why she came at noon was because she knew nobody would be there. Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food. Jesus meets this Samaritan woman at the well, and she was there at a very odd time when no one else would have been there. It was like she was trying to avoid being noticed. Have you ever done that? You ever tried to go somewhere and not be noticed, and then you run right into somebody? A little background on this woman. She'd been married 5 different times, and guy number 6 was the one she was currently living with, and it wasn't her husband. And she was either a person with a very questionable reputation, or because of her failures, she had been rejected by her community, or maybe even both. It was for her that Jesus said, I have to go where no one else wants to go. He was on a mission, and he was going to reach her and restore her. He didn't care that she was a Samaritan. He didn't care that she was a woman with a questionable reputation. He didn't care that the rest of the community had rejected her. In spite of all that, Jesus not only engaged her in conversation, which was a huge chasm all by itself, he treated her with dignity and he loved her, and in doing so, Jesus changed her life. Trilla Newbell had a blog about this particular chapter in the book of John, and this is what she wrote. I thought it was so insightful. There are invisible lines in the sand about this situation, unknown to modern readers, but well known to John's first audience. Cultural lines, religious lines, ethnic lines, and gender lines mark dramatic rings around that particular well. But here's the one thing about Jesus: he's not afraid to cross lines. Today, we're nervous about crossing all kinds of lines. In fact, that's why many of us may be a little reluctant about sharing our faith and about inviting Jesus into the lives of people that we know, love, and trust. She went from being someone who came to the well at the hottest time of day to avoid being noticed by anyone to a woman so compelled by the love of Jesus that she went back into town to tell everybody else about the life-changing experience that she had. The Bible says that she left her water jar, the very reason why she was going to the well, and she went back into town and told her neighbors. Look what it says in verse 28. So the woman left her water jar and went back into town and said to the people, "Come see a man who told me all I have ever did. Can this be the Christ?" So what makes this story so important? Well, the story offers you and me some very insightful, important discoveries. The first one is that we discovered that Jesus had a mission. Jesus himself had a cause that was so compelling that when he woke up every day thinking, "This is what I have to do today." And the second thing we discover is that we have a mission. As Christ followers, Jesus' mission is our mission. So we too have a compelling cause. We have something we have to do. Well, we first of all need to embrace Jesus' mission. The second thing I want us to do is I want us to examine the impact. I've been watching and reading about the story behind the movie called The Sound of Freedom. Anybody been hearing about that story, that movie? A true story of the life of a mission of Tim Ballard, a man who worked for U.S. Land Security and stumbled on the atrocities of children being sold into sex trafficking. And his mission is to bring light to this plight to save lives. I haven't been to the movie yet, but when I get the opportunity, I will. It's making a huge impact. It's already done far better than it ever dreamt it would do in the box office. And the interesting thing is, if you do any of the research about this movie, there are some movie theaters that are so against this movie that they're actually pulling the alarm in the middle of it, or they're turning off the air conditioning just so that people will leave. He has a have-to. I heard this morning when I was up at 4:30, so I was looking for something to do while I was drinking my coffee, and I saw an excerpt of the man who produced this movie. They waited 3.5 years for this to be produced. And all the people that were in the official realms of Hollywood said it would never sell. One of the individuals asked him, "Do you think God's timing was now?" And he said, "Oh, yes." But he said, "It took me a long time to wait for it." Jesus has a far greater influence and effect than we can really imagine. In fact, very often we brush over the astounding details of what happens when Jesus lives out his mission. Look what happens in this story. We continue on, verse 39. So many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. "He told me everything I ever did." So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with him, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. Do you notice the details here? Many believed in Jesus. Why? What does it say? Because of her testimony. That was key. They came to Jesus. They ran out to the well. And not only did they run out to the well to listen to him and to interact with him, they urged him to stay with them. Again, think of the barriers. He wasn't even supposed to be there. Now he's going to stay 2 days. What would the Jews think? And through his conversations, many more believed. So what about us? How can we join his mission? I want you to examine the impact of living out Jesus' mission. The first thing we need to do is embrace reaching people far from God. The first element is reach, and it's about reaching people far from God. The Samaritan woman was far from God. And by far from God, it didn't mean that she wasn't spiritual. She was definitely spiritual. She had spiritual questions, spiritual interests, spiritual longings. We all are fundamentally spiritual beings. But what she had not yet found was her way back to God. And that is why Jesus was there. She's a lot like a guy named Jack. Looking back, Jack always had been a spiritually minded person. As a kid, his parents took him to church. He always had spiritual questions, spiritual interests, and spiritual longings. And as an adult, he was in and out of church. But because he was so abused as a child and rejected by those who should have loved him, Jack started drinking a lot, doing drugs a lot. And Jack tried to escape this painful past of abuse and failure through drugs and alcohol. This escape made him forget all that for a while. But this escape eventually ended up with him being jobless, homeless, and all alone. And Jack lived out of a local YMCA. Even though Jack had been raised in the church and considered himself spiritual, he now found himself in a place where he was so very far from God. It was the influence of a few friends that got him started on his path to sobriety and reaching out to a higher power. It was 2 years later that his search brought him to a church, to a small group. And it was there that Jack took a huge step in his spiritual journey. And Jack asked if he could get baptized. When Jack was asked why he wanted to get baptized, he said this: "This is to let people know I found my way back to God and I found mission for my life." Jack, like the Samaritan woman, was far from God and now has been reached. And every day, there are people like Jack and the Samaritan woman around me and around you. They're in your family. They're in your neighborhood. We work with them. We go to school with them. And they're all around us while we're doing the same old stuff. There are people just like me, people just like you, just people who are still far from God. And God wants us to reach them. Our mission is to reach them. The second thing is to embrace restoring God's dream for the world. In the first element, it's reach. It's about reaching people for God. The second world-changing element of Jesus' mission is restore. It's all about restoring God's dream in this world. God's dream and desire for all of us from the very beginning is for us to live in perfect relationship with him and with each other. There were people in the Samaritan woman's life that claimed to love her, but only used her. Because of that, and because of the choices that she made, the dream God had for her life had been shattered. And there are people all around us like her, living in situations far less than God ever dreamed, because of some of their choices, and some because of unjust people who should have loved them. Might be that that person you pass lives on your street. Might be the person who struggles with an addiction and hasn't yet hit rock bottom. Some of them are people who have been marginalized or forgotten, like a single mom trying to raise kids on a poverty level income, or the refugee who was all alone and trying to make a home, or maybe the child doesn't have access to a good education simply because of the neighborhood that he or she lives in. Anytime you see someone living their life in a condition or circumstance that are less than what God dreamed, know this: Jesus wants to restore God's dream for their life. Our mission is to restore them. And then lastly, we need to embrace reproducing God's mission. The eternity-altering and world-changing elements of Jesus' mission included reaching, restoring, and reproducing this mission in the lives of others. And that's exactly what happened in the life of the Samaritan woman. Look at verse 39. We read something amazing. It says that the woman who was far from God and an outcast from her own people, they're the very ones that she takes the mission to, her community. Look at what it says. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in Jesus because of the woman's testimony. She no longer wakes up thinking, go get water. That's what I have to do. Now she has something in her life where she wakes up every morning knowing, this is what I have to do. I have to release it and release people into the mission. We will explore your part of Jesus' mission in the weeks to come. Frela Newell said this, why did Jesus have to travel through Samaria? There was a woman he had to talk to, and her people needed him. And when we put this all together, we can clearly see the mission of Jesus. It's when individuals and as a church, we do all three. We reach, we restore, we produce. Do you understand that? Good, then I'm going to push you just beyond just understanding it into action. So let me ask you a question. What's the mission statement of Parkview Alliance Church? Turn to your neighbor. Give it your best shot. See what you know. All right. If you said inspiring people into a growing relationship with Jesus, you're correct. That's our mission. But it's not just our church's mission. As a Christ follower, this is our mission, your mission. It's no longer acceptable as a Christ follower to just know about Jesus' mission. We want every person on mission. We're raising the bar starting now. It's not just a standard for us, but a standard for all of Jesus' followers. In the Bible, there's no such thing as a follower of Jesus who is not fully engaged in the mission of Jesus. Their conversion was a commitment to the mission, and their baptism was their ordination. So if you're a follower of Christ, you have mission. Here it is. And we want to help you discover your part of this mission. And some of you, like me, are going to discover that your mission may simply be in your neighborhood. For others, your mission may be your workplace or school. Still others, your mission is a particular cause or community that God has called you to. But I want to encourage you, number three, to engage in this bless strategy that we're going to look at together. I hope you can be here during the weekends ahead of us. As we study the life of Jesus, we're going to discover that his strategy to change the world was the same strategy that God asked Abraham to use to change the world. It's the blessing strategy from Genesis chapter 12, where God said to Abraham, I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. And I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. All the people will be blessed through you. God's first strategy for reaching the world was blessing. You know the story. Abraham and Sarah were old. They had no children. And he was given this promise of touching the world. But in this place of desperation, that the mission of God is usually what often gets finally flourished. And so we go, in Matthew 28, Jesus repeats God's words by telling his disciples to go into all the world. Our God is constantly on the move, and he wants his people to be on the move as well. And we are about the mission of befriending and blessing the people we come across here in this town in our circles of influence. God has blessed us, not to hoard it, but to be a blessing to others. And then Jesus picks up the strategy in Luke chapter 19, when a crooked man by the name of Zacchaeus wiggles up a tree to see Jesus. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through, and the man was there by the name of Zacchaeus, and he was a chief tax collector, and he was wealthy. Jesus was just passing through on his way to Jericho, but he stopped and spent time with a man whom most people hated. And through this encounter, you know the story, Zacchaeus found salvation. And this is what it says. Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to you into this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." Think of this magnificent blessing. Think of the magnitude of the blessing that Jesus just gave him. Zacchaeus, a tax collector, who was despised by his own people as a traitor for working, for the Roman government, is now called a son of Abraham. He is now blessed to be a blessing. What was a true Abraham? What was true of Abraham became true of Zacchaeus at that moment, and it's also true of us. God's plan for loving our neighbors and changing our world is the same simple strategy. Paul, in his letter to the church of Galatia, makes this connection. Listen to what I'm about to read, for you're going to see a theme. "Understand then that those who have faith are children of Abraham. Scripture foresaw that God would justify the Gentiles by faith and announce the gospel in advance to Abraham. All nations will be blessed through you. So those who rely on faith are blessed along with Abraham, the father of faith." And this blessing strategy can be summarized in five missional practices. And so we don't have to remember all of the five practices of Jesus. They form an acrostic for the word bless. We're going to explain each one of them in this series that we've got coming up. Now, I'm not going to tell you all of them right now. You have to come to figure that part. This is a teaser. For the next few weeks, we're going to be putting handles on how each of us can bless others. We're going to give you something just simple to make a part of your lives so that we can make a difference in our community. Will you pray with me? Father, I want to thank you for revealing to us this morning how we can go from the same old to being on mission. Jesus, you lived and died on mission to bring salvation to the world. And you've commanded us to extend your mission in the places where we work, live, and play. You went out of your way to reach the woman at the well. And how this illustrates for us just how you value lost people. And today, as we seek to be light and salt here in the town of Vermilion and surrounding